Accession number 21064, Rule 3.
Tom No, Reel 3. Can you spell out why the tent was unsuitable, please?
Well, the RSM of the Duke of Wellington's regiment brought along his own tent with a view to being able to be more manoeuvrable, and thinking that at any place he may find himself, he'd got shelter and to operate his work from there. But when he was speaking to Mr. Williams, the RSM of the Welsh Regiment, Mr. Williams pointed out that he would have a more substantial place built into the hillside or a sandbagged area. Our own RSM was of the opinion that this would do nicely for him, which he had. Later on it transpired that the tent, whilst it was a nice, good-looking tent, but wasn't very thick in terms of canvas. And it was decided that whilst the weather was appropriate at this particular time, it certainly wouldn't last for any length of time in the bad weather. So it was determined then that he would use it until he was forced out of it and then into the undercover. So he, in the first few weeks of the period that we were in Korea, the RSM used this tent. Later on, when the weather became colder and more severe, the tent was folded away and he went into underground like everyone else. He was found in it, it was warmer and more secure.
So, the regiment have arrived. Can you take it on the next step, please?
Yeah. Now that the regiment had arrived and taken over from the Welsh regiment, we occupied all the places of importance along the front which the regiment had just gone out and left for us. We instituted our own patrolling and security arrangements along the front line, and generally speaking it was a case of being prepared for any eventuality, simply because the area that we were patrolling and looking after at that particular time was considered to be the gateway to Seoul if the enemy had decided to make any push or move towards the south. We should be in the direct line of the thrust, and so it was quite an important area to hold and to monitor. During this time there were several clashes of patrols in the area, our patrols moving out into no man's land and meeting up with the opposite numbers. The Chinamen, who at that time were on the other side, were called Chinamen as opposed to North Koreans. There were usual conflicts of people being shot at and missing people in the dark, people being escaping only by the skin of their teeth because of the interaction of crossfires from other people. But all in all, it was a case of sounding out the enemy, finding out where they were, and the powers that be, the CO and the intelligence people, forming plans for to maintain or to improve the position that we're in.
Did you immediately start your sniping work?
We instituted sniping people for all the company areas, the leading company areas, and this involved going down in observation posts, moving out into no man's land in between areas, supporting the people who were actually out on patrols. It was mainly during the daylight hours would be observation from a restricted point of view. On other times it would be a case of moving out into no man's land in front of our own positions to get a bit more better view of the enemy and to find out what his movements were. Because of this, the tone of the messages coming through would be mostly Nante Roger, nothing to report, nothing to report. During the daylight hours, there was hardly anything to see from the Chinaman.
Nante Roger?
Nante Roger. It's a code name for nothing to report. It's just verbal, aerial verbal jargon, just to cut down on words.
Can you describe any incidents you were in whilst you did the sniping, please?
After we'd moved away from Yongdong, this Yongdong visit, we stayed for about 4 or 5 weeks, and then we moved up into the next sector in our Commonwealth area, and it was called the Naichon area. Here again, in the Naichon area, we had a similar arrangement where there was something like 10, 12, or even 1,300 yards distance between our own forces and the enemy forces. And the usual procedure of erecting patrols, standing patrols, minefields, gaps, barbed wire, and all this sort of thing came into it with a view to protecting the overall front. The sniper section were deployed in this area. I myself, with this Philip Seymour, was one of my sniper section members. We were in the habit of going down into one company area quite frequently and observing from the frontage over onto the Chinaman's side, and we saw what appeared to be two men working in a tunnel side or opening a tunnel side into the hills opposite. We looked at this and watched him for the rest of the day, then came back and made our normal report to the intelligence officer, who logged it for the CO next morning to peruse. With a view to finding out more about it, we were told to concentrate on that area of frontage, and on two or three more occasions we went down that way and we were able to see Chinamen working in the hillside and bringing out the spoil as though they were making a tunnel either for troops or for a gun emplacement. This was kept, the log of this information was kept going. We even knew exactly how many logs had been used in the preparation of the tunnel at the time. Because of this, and because of the knowledge of this, it was decided that there'd be a two-man recce patrol sent out across the valley into the Chinaman's land to stay out all the rest of the next day. They'd go out one night and come back in the following night or whenever it was convenient to do so, with a view to observing the work that's been done on this tunnel. I myself, seeing that I was one of the people who reported it in the first place, was given the job of going over with a young officer called Ian Orr from one of the leading companies. We got the job of going over and doing what they call a layup patrol. In other words, we went over during the hours of darkness as best we could, found our way over there, secluded ourselves on the enemy side of the valley with a view to being able to watch what the working party, the Chinese working party, were doing, and then to be able to report back on the conclusion of our layup patrol the following day. This is in terms of working out a way across the valley in the late night of one night, and then being able to conceal yourself sufficiently well enough not to be seen at the other side for the rest of the following day. And then, of course, after you've got all the information back, you have to make your own way back again across the valley into our own lines the following day. This doesn't sound all that difficult, except that the temperatures at that time of year were so adverse. We're talking about 30s and 40 belows. For a man to be laid out all day was quite an achievement in itself, let alone get across the valley and then stay out all day and then come back the following day. We set off at last light from our own particular company area. Charlie Company was the company involved. Ian Orr came from this company, the young lieutenant that was with me, and we worked our way down through the minefield and through the barbed wire and approaches to the outlying ground, which was no man's land. The temperatures at this time were quite well below zero, with snow and frost, very heavy frost down. We had to work our way across the valley intermittently with the stages and bounds or leaps that we used to call them. This took something like 4 hours of crawling about on your belly and on your hands and knees and keeping down as low as possible, and the odd flare and the movement of the troops may have been causing it to sort of seek cover and wait while things quieten down again. And after a period of this movement across the valley, we eventually got over to the Chinaman's lines, and we decided to go round across the, from the spur that we were going to watch and come at it from the rear side, in other words, cross over into Chinaman's land and come in from the rear so that we could pick a place to watch. This we did without too much trouble, and then we decided to split up and then pick our own place to form a little hide or hidey place or cover it with the hessian or trees or whatever that might be going in order to make a watchful place ready for the, when the light changes round. During this period of getting to and from this, these little hides that we decided we'd make on the hillside opposite, the code name of the feature we were looking at was called Eden. And everyone knew that we were supposed to be out there, and at this particular time they were going to hold back on any fire orders that may be given with a view to protecting us in that respect, so that we weren't under our own shell fire. In the event of emergency, of course, they would normally have opened up and used the shell fire anyway, but that was the order that was given. In actual fact, during the day, there were one or two shells fired at us from given fire orders by nameless people, not quite sure why they should have ordered an attack on that particular feature. But anyway, that's how the day started off. I myself went nearer to the tunnel entrance, which we thought was the makings of a tunnel entrance, and settled myself in and dug myself a little hide and covered it over with firs and trees which were adjacent. And by the time I'd finished this and got myself settled in, the temperatures were, by this time of course, were falling still further, and it was getting towards daybreak. There was a Chinese patrol came in at that late hour of the morning, and with a view to sort of either occupying the spur or just on the way back through. Fortunately, they went away from the spur and back into Chinaman's land and spent the rest of the day up there, which left me more or less looking out across towards where the suspected tunnel was. Lo and behold, within 20 yards of where I'd been digging myself a hidey hole and covering it and making this camouflage hide, there appeared some Chinamen working at this particular tunnel entrance we'd come all this way to see. They were going in and out and emptying barrow loads of earth and using timbers for the makeshift tunnel for either a gun emplacement or to hide people who were out on patrol or coming out of patrol or going on patrol, and it would probably be anything up to 30 men. During this particular period, one of the Chinamen decided to come and relieve himself on the side of the hill, and lo and behold, who did he come and wee on but yours truly, myself. He picked a convenient bush, as he thought, to relieve himself, and it was the hide that I'd made, and I got weed on by the Chinaman. I was supposed to be making notes and keeping track of everything that happened during the day, and seeing that I was so close to them, the noise of anything that I might have made, like taking papers out of pockets or to write or to move my body, would have been giving the show away because of the frozen nature of your clothes. Everything was frosted over, and even getting into your pockets and everything seemed to be as though it was making a hell of a noise. So I more or less had to sort of stay still all the time. And once the feature and the sequence of actions from the Chinaman came out, it was apparent then that I could just monitor what they were doing without having to make notes of it, just refer to it from memory at a later date. This went on for most of the day. They had a break for their lunchtime period. During this period, I myself wanted a drink or something to eat, and it was most difficult to get it out of the pockets and break into what little bit of a sustenance that we had carried with us. We were not in radio contact with the our own forces on the other side. We'd come lightly armed and lightly prepared. All that we were going to do was to observe and around and just report back on what we'd seen. Towards the later afternoon, when dust started to fall, there was some movement in the valley below us, and this same Chinese patrol that left in the morning, by all accounts, was now making their way back again to assume their positions for the evening's work, which we normally did in our patrolling activities. Instead of carrying on round the spur like we would have expected them to do, they came up and joined these people who were making the tunnel and sat around and were talking quite animatedly discussing the effects of how far they'd gone on with their work and what jobs they had to do this particular evening. And it was quite a jovial little party that was going on. By this time, we were thinking in terms of packing up our gear and getting back to our own lines, but unfortunately, with the patrols being in front of us, we now had to decide how to get out of this with a view to coming back and reporting the incident. It took quite a bit of a while to get away from these people, A, because they were sat in a group around the tunnel entrance, and I was the most nearest to them, and any movement that I might have made would have given the position away, and that would have been the end of the patrol. We would have lost all the initiative out of that. So it was a case of waiting while things got a little bit under control so that I could ease my way back. There was one Chinaman particularly in this group who seemed to be interested in telling everybody whether it was his favourite table tennis team or football team or whatever. He seemed to be holding the chair and saying quite a lot and causing his mates to have a lot of hilarious guffawing and laughing and such. Whilst this was all about and doing, I was able to quietly slide away and get further back to the rear and then get away from them eventually. I then had to go and find my partner, Mr. Orr, who was about 20 or 30 yards further back from where I'd been situated. I had to alert him as to what was happening in the front of the spur where I'd been laid down. Because of that, we had to make our own way back in an alternative route back to our own lines.
What time of day was this?
This would be in the early hours, about 4 o'clock in the morning, between 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning when we finally decided to get back. It was still dark. Because of the patrols that were in front of us, and we now knew that they had their standing patrols like we had, they had their own version of standing patrols and reinforcements at the front. We couldn't go back to our own lines the way that we had come in. So we had to make a bit of a detour and come back round off the top of the hill again and down the valley and into the no man's land area from another angle. During this time, of course, there's flares going up, periodic flares for observation purposes. There was the danger of bumping into other patrols that were still out and active during the hours of darkness. When these happened, you had to sort of take cover and wait while things went quiet. As I say, we were lightly armed. We didn't go out for a fight or anything. We just went out for observation purposes, just to find out the interest that the Chinaman had on this tunnel thing that they were preparing. So it took the rest of the night for us to get back across to where our own lines were situated. And across the valley from where we were, there was a little rickety bridge across a stream, which the stream was now frozen over, of course, and the snow and the icicles and everything were dripping about it. But we knew that there was one of our standing patrols would be there, watching out for any eventuality and to give warning to the company towards the rear if anything did happen. We were going to make our way to this particular patrol and then work our way back into the and be accepted inside our own area lines and wire. The trouble about this, of course, is that we had a system of passwords. Every night it changed. Every 24 hours the password changed. And for some reason or other, the powers that be never give us the password for the following day. We knew the password for one night, but we didn't know what the password would be for the following night. And so, because of that, we were approaching our own minds with a view to trying to be accepted back in without risk of getting shot up. And we didn't know the password. One bright little spark decided to open the shout the usual cautionary halt, who goes there. Then we made our presence known and said we were the party that were being expected in, but we didn't know the password. Simply because this lad remembered the officer's name and knew that we were both out on this particular event, it soon passed over that everything was safe and we were accepted in. It would have been just our luck to have been shot up by our own people by giving a false password or try to bluff our way through the patrol that was there. Anyhow, we arrived safely and then we were accepted back into the company precinct through the wire and the minefield. And that was the end of that particular, what they called a layup patrol. What made it all the more hazardous, of course, was the fact that it was in the middle of winter. In fact, it was my birthday, 23rd of November. It seems strange that all these sort of happenings, in my particular case, happened on dates which were crucial to me. Christmas Eve, my birthday, the Battle of Hook was May the 27th, 28th. I was married on May 27th, which was Springbank, or May Day, as the Whitsuntide, as it was called. So that was the end of the layup patrol. We came back in. There was a meal being prepared for us, or expected us in any time up to breakfast time. So they'd put on a nice hot meal, and that was the first meal or drink that I'd had since setting out on the patrol. I wasn't able, because of the conditions of the weather and making the noise towards the enemy that may have heard the noise, if I'd have opened things up and tried to. There was one occasion which stopped me from making any further movement on this was during the early hours of the morning when I'd got myself settled into this hide that I'd made. I'd thought, well, now that I'm here, I can get myself comfortable. I'll get myself a drink made up or something, and then that will support me for whatever may cross up. And we carried with us on that particular time energy-giving sweets, a bit of chocolate. I had two tins of self-heating soup in my pockets, inside pocket. And the idea of these self-heating soups were that you pull the cap off the top and you ignited the central core, which was a burner. And this burnt and radiated the heat inside the can and warmed the can, whatever it may be, soup, oxtail soup, mixed or anything like that. You had a ready-made sort of hot drink or hot soup. I proceeded to do this round about 2 o'clock in the morning, on that particular morning, and having got myself settled into the place and thinking, well, here's a chance now to get myself some soup and some sweets to eat to fortify myself, I pulled the plug let this fuse blow on the can. And it was just like a kettle when it was ready to blow its whistle. The can was getting warmer and warmer, and there was a sizzling noise from the top of the can. And it was just like a kettle ready for blowing its whistle when it wants to switch off. And I was sticking it against my chest and against my equipment to try and drown the noise, but it wouldn't stop. And I was in fear of the enemy picking up the noise and discovering where I were because of it. I eventually managed to get what was left of the soup and use it, and I thought, well, it's too risky to try any more of that sort of escapade, so that was the rest of my feeding for all that day following.
What happened on Christmas Eve? You said that was a key date.
Well, Christmas Eve was another type of patrol, because it was a follow-up to this patrol, that the CO decided that we would send out a fighting patrol to this tunnel across the valley. And the idea would be that the patrol would consist of an officer, a sergeant, and 10 men, 10 or 11 men. One part of the men would be the fighting party. The other half of the party would be the defence or protecting party, with a view to sort of getting across the valley without any hazardous trips or casualties. Once we got to the tunnel, the fighting party or the entrance party would go in and examine the tunnel, and with a view to finding out how much they'd done or how we could dispose of the tunnel. And the other group outside would be the defence party, just in case we were surprised by the Chinamen that may come along during the night, having got wind that we were in their patch. I was the sergeant in charge of this party, and the same officer that was with me on the layout patrol was in the fighting party, which would be the entrance party. The people would go into the tunnel. We set out in the normal way. We went out through the wire. We had the code words, passwords. We set off with views of how far we could go during the night to be able to get across to our objective. We arrived safe and sound at the base of the hill. When we got to the base of the hill, we heard that the Chinamen who were working in the tunnel had either got wind that we were there or decided to leave, and they were making their way out of the tunnel and up towards their own lines further back into the Chinamen's area. The fighting party that were going to go into the tunnel went in to do their thing. I, with the brain gunners and three more riflemen, went further back in and followed these Chinamen with a view to capturing them, to stop them going back and giving the message to the Chinamen that were there. Unfortunately, they disappeared in the night and we didn't get any further contact with them. But whilst we were over there, we made all due reconnaissance of the tunnel and found out all its size and content and what sort of a danger it would be to our own lines at the other side. We had no casualties at this particular time, so it was a case of making a record of everything that we'd seen and then came back along the same route that we went out on and got back to our own lines without too much difficulty. The usual things like mortaring and shell fire going off, but we managed to get through and there were no casualties. And that was on the 24th, Christmas Eve.
Now, what about the Hook Battle? You said this was 27th, 28th of May.
Yeah.
Can you take me through your memories of that, please?
Before that, if you like, the culmination of that, those two patrols that we did ended up in the CO deciding to institute an attack on this tunnel and do it for once and for all and get rid of it. And it was organised that two officers and 15 men will go along, including a detonation party from the corporal who was in charge of the detonation, was a corporal out of the engineers. And they will go along and do this tunnel, get rid of it and just blow it up.
Were you on this party?
No, I was on the administration of it, and I thought I was going to be on it. And then I was told at the last moment that I wasn't going to be on it. I was going to be rested out of this one. But the young officer that was with me on the first two patrols, he was the second in command to the leader of the party, who was Rodney Harms, Lieutenant Rodney Harms, and Ian Orr was the two officers. There were 15 men deployed into two groups, and there again the same sort of effect would have taken place. There was a demolition party or an attack party, and then the other half of the group would be the defence and protection party once they were over there. And this was due to take place at the end of January. In fact, it was the 24th of January when this all happened. It was still in winter time, of course. And it was due to set out at first light, would be about 7 o'clock in the morning or thereabouts. In actual fact, it set out at 8 o'clock. But during all this period of training and everything, the administration that went into doing this patrol, the code name for the patrol was called Full Moon. And everyone thought it was going to be done at night time, like all the other patrols that had been taking place at the up to Clymer. They were all sort of nighttime patrols, using the hours of darkness to do whatever you had to do over in either No Man's Land or Chinaman's Land, and then make your way back in before first light and under cover of your own defences.